Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. You know, for the past 21 years, people have been getting together in March to celebrate Aldo Leopold. And this year, Leopold Week is gone virtual, and we're going to talk with our next guest about some planned events and how Leopold's legacy has influenced leaders in conservation. Three guests for you today, so it's great. Buddy Haffaker. Buddy is president and executive director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation. Buddy, good to have you back.
Always good to be with you, Larry.
Thanks for joining us. Also, Wisconsin DNR Secretary Preston Cole. And Secretary Cole, it's great to have you back. We got a voice problem there, Secretary Cole. We'll figure that out. Well, Dr. J. Drew Lanham, let's turn to you. Thank you so much for joining us as well.
Thank you for having me, Larry. I'm down here in South Carolina, so I'm the outsider, but I love Wisconsin.
Okay. Well, Leopold Week. Buddy, how did Leopold Week get started?
Yeah, just a quick history. I mean, as many of your listeners know, Larry, Aldo Leopold was a forester, professor of wildlife ecology at UW-Madison, landowner, pioneering ecological restoration, and the author of a Sand County Almanac. And so, as you said, Leopold Week started 21 years ago by state decree, recognizing the last formal contribution Leopold made to a Sand County Almanac by a small town in Lodi and Dr. Tom Heberlein and fellow nature lovers that were kind of foiled by Wisconsin's finicky spring, wanted to get outdoors, but the weather wouldn't let them. So they'd get together to read a Sand County Almanac, kind of reflect on where conservation was at and what they could do in their community to advance the ethic. And it's just grown from there. Last year, we had 40 communities have events. As you said, this year, 40 communities across Wisconsin and several different states. This year, everything kind of pivoted virtually. So we're trying some new programs. Drew did an amazing performance for us last night that's going to be available on our website. And just talking about where conservation, not only celebrating Leopold's legacy, but also challenging it. And where are we at now and where does conservation need to go to really take care of all people and places? So really excited about the opportunity to have that conversation today.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Secretary Cole, how has Aldo Leopold influenced conservation in Wisconsin in your mind? Oh, darn, we're still having a voice problem with him. Well, let me ask Drew, how's it influenced conservation across the country?
Well, Larry, I think it is. It transcends boundaries, right? It's Aldo Leopold was, as you know, many people would say he was a man of his time, but I think he was way beyond it in many ways. So for as a wildlife professional myself, it's sort of the canon. A Sand County Almanac is sort of the canon for conservation. But then many consider Aldo Leopold the father of wildlife ecology as a profession. So it's impacted us sort of in that formal way, but in the informal way that an ethic informs our behavior as land stewards, as caring nurturers of nature, it's unequaled, really, that those words written all those years ago, some of them thoughts of and during the beginning of Aldo Leopold's career, have transcended over 100 years of time and the boundaries, not just of every state, but of many countries to help us understand our relationship with nature. So it's a deep dive. But I, you know, every chance I get, I come back to Wisconsin and spend time at the shack and with Buddy and other people at ground zero, as it were, yeah, for this way of thinking.
Yeah. Secretary Cole, I think we may have you here now. What about its influence in Wisconsin?
Around us each and every day to see the influence of those who care about the land and what we've created from the inception of the state of Wisconsin. And so needless to say, with, you know, 15 state forests, 49 parks, trails galore, hundreds of thousands of miles of rivers and streams, all for the taking for all those individuals who live in the state of Wisconsin and certainly for those who visit. And it also transcends into our economy in the state of Wisconsin. So my role in all of this is to help get feedback and from citizens to ask them the question, what would you like to see in your outdoors in the state of Wisconsin? And so that resonates when we're asking our customers, so to speak, and our citizens, what they would like to see. So quite frankly, I work for them, and we just follow suit that way.
So actually probably a good time for me to mention the phone. I don't believe I did that to start this off. If you'd like to join in with your own questions or comments or thoughts, maybe to any of our guests, I hope you will. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Edie from Baraboo just had a question for you, buddy. She's wondering if there are any more of those phenology calendars left, and if so, could she, where could she find one near Baraboo? Oh, nuts. We're losing. I'm not hearing you, buddy.
Well, his mic is muted, I think, right?
I'm muted. Yeah, sorry. We'll work through all this technology. the phenology calendar is a really popular item. Probably easiest. We do have a few left, but they sell out fast. Go to our website, www.aldoleopold.org, to pick one up.
Okay, that's probably the simplest way to do it. You can do it right from the comfort of your own home, Edie. So there you go. Let's take a call from Sharon in Minocqua, one of my favorite areas of the state. Sharon, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Harry. Hi, buddy. This is Sharon Riley. So wonderful to hear you on the radio. I just wanted to tell a little story how when I lived in Baraboo, I hosted Ufuk Ozdag. She's a professor from Turkey. And she was in Baraboo translating Sen County Almanac into Turkish. So it's pretty apparent that Aldo Leopold, you know, his influence goes well beyond the United States. He's had an influence on conservation around the world. And it was such a pleasure for me to reread Sen County Almanac and help Ufuk in her Turkish translation. I got a whole new insight into it by having someone who's translating it into a different language. It was just such a wonderful experience when I hosted her at my house in Baraboo. And, buddy, it's so wonderful to hear you back on the radio.
Sharon, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call very much. Comment maybe, buddy?
Well, Drew also knows Ufuk. We've all been able to spend time together. And Sharon's correct and great. It's like old home week here. Great to hear so many friends. But we have a new translation that has just hit the press from Croatia. And Sharon is right. Kind of reading Leopold through the lens of a different perspective, both I think helps us capture how deep Leopold captured things. And where some of those limits are, which is, I think, really interesting and important for us to understand at this moment in time.
Yeah. And, you know, I always think back and say a nice thanks to Tom Heberlein for that idea of all those years ago. I remember when he was talking about it before it happened even. And just reading it out loud the reader himself or herself, I think, gains a little something from it. And hearing somebody else reading it to you, you gain a little different perspective as well, wouldn't you say, Secretary Cole?
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, our role in all of this is, you know, I came to the table late, and so I'm crashing Buddy and Drew's party. And so the goal for me and what I do, just to remind folks that, you know, parents play a large role in youngsters that help shape them around conservation. And so my learning of conservation was my parents and my grandparents. And so our family was part of the Great Migration out of Mississippi, Lowndes County, Mississippi. My father's from Ada, Texas. And so they left the South for all the right reasons, which is to save their family, and headed north. And we wound up in southwestern Michigan, where I honed my skills as a conservationist and with Future Farmers of America, and subsequently on to the School of Forestry. But again, you know, being the youngest of nine, it was my responsibility mm-hmm. to tend to the crop. And we leased part of our land out to the Edwards family, who were farmers, and then we grew our own food, of course. And so as I had to learn how to take care of those plants, I was always getting coached about how important this land is. And it wasn't land ethic. It was, you have to take care of this land to preserve it and leave something in place for others. And that's how I was taught, and that's been my code going forward. And people come to conservation in myriad of ways. And so that was just my story of how I was able to come, and certainly know that Buddy and the folks at the, you know, the foundation find ways to engage people. You know, you just heard that they're in Croatia and converting that language and for the foundation. I just know that we all come in very different ways. And so we take all comers, but we have to ensure that you got to reach back and bring somebody forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I tell you what, we've some callers online. You can join in too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us to ideas@wpr.org. I've got lots of questions for our guests, but I always step back when you call in and let you ask those questions. So you can do that again, 800-642-1234, email to ideas@wpr.org. With us, Buddy Haffaker, President, Executive Director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, our Wisconsin DNR Secretary, Preston Cole, and Dr. Drew Lanham. I really want to talk with him about what he was talking about. He's an alumna, distinguished professor of wildlife ecology, a master teacher, and a certified wildlife biologist at Clemson University. I'm not even sure I got all that in the introduction when I started. But it's in there now, and they'll all be back. And right after this look at the news, we'll talk some more with them. I'm Larry Mueller. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here talking about Leopold Week. It's going on right now across Wisconsin and elsewhere. Three guests for you. Buddy Haffaker, President and Executive Director of the Aldo Leopold Foundation, Wisconsin DNR Secretary Preston Cole, and Dr. Drew Lanham, an alumni, a distinguished professor of wildlife ecology, a master teacher, certified wildlife biologist, at Clemson University, one of the speakers. I want to ask him about his talk. I think he gave it yesterday. We'll get to that. But have you been influenced by Aldo Leopold? Are you joining in on any events this week? We'd love to hear from you. Give a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And before I go to Drew, Buddy, we're right in the middle of this, and people are going to be interested in finding out, you know, how do I get involved in this that's going on right now? Maybe tell us about that.
Yeah, thanks for asking, Larry. Best place, again, to go is our website, www.aldoleopold.org. And if you do /Leopold Week, you get right to the agenda of speakers and programs. So we have another great program tonight and one tomorrow night. We had Dr. Stan Temple do a program Monday and Drew do a program last night. All these will eventually be available on the website. But those, that's the best way to get connected to the formal programs. And then our social media sites are carrying fun questions, quizzes, and other ways to engage. So that's just another kind of fun way to be part of it, since we can't all be together this year.
Yeah. Drew, maybe you can talk about what you spoke on last evening.
Well, again, Larry, thanks for the chance to be here. And, you know, last night was about connections, really. And I think that's what Aldo Leopold was about, right? Our connections to the land, but also the human connection, how we relate to one another. And in these times, I mean, it's an obvious question that has to be addressed. And so what I wanted to present last night was data of a sort that is flesh and bone. And as important as Aldo Leopold is to us, he's not here to answer questions. And so I posed several questions to a very dear friend, Estella Leopold Jr., and in a letter that I wrote to her and then presented to the public, but a very personal letter in ways, but a letter I think that applies to the current times and how Aldo would have felt not just about nature and the work that he was doing, but his evolving mind to think about social context and how we relate to one another. So I like to say in my work as a bird brain, as an ornithologist, that we all have a bird story, even if it's the leg of chicken that we ate last night. And in that way, these connections to birds or to our own being that I was hopefully able to communicate that through this letter to Estella was part of my presentation and a poem about birding with Aldo. So, it was a little bit of imagining on my part, a good bit of reality in terms of my conversations with Estella and understanding who her father was through her. And I think that's a pretty good way to understand a legacy when we can sort of go at least to the second order stream, maybe not the headwater, maybe not the first order, but to that second order stream to begin to understand how things flow through time.
Jonathan in La Crosse has a question, I think. Well, they're all important questions. Jonathan, let's give you a chance to join in. Thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for having me. Good afternoon, gentlemen, and Secretary Cole. I know recently that a woman has been appointed the head forester in the state of Wisconsin. And knowing a little about Secretary Cole's background, I'm curious as to what outreach programs or paths, maybe through our educational systems, should our young people, especially young women and young people of color, strive for to be active environmentalist and how they can be involved in the conservation industry?
Good questions. Secretary Cole, we can start with you and let others, sure. Drew and maybe Buddy, chime in. But Secretary Cole?
Thank you for that, Jonathan. The central question is, what do you do with young children? And how do you get them engaged in this? And of course, as I mentioned earlier, as a future farmer of America, I honed my skills there and later on in college. Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts offer a wonderful opportunity. I can't tell you how many times I've had to help children get their forestry badge in their efforts to raise their own awareness about outdoors and what it means to us. And, you know, I continue to talk about and think about, you know, when asked what's my favorite passage, when we see land as a community to which we belong, we may begin to use it with love and respect. That says and continues to resonate with me because of people's connections to land. But if you don't have that connection, you don't have that certain je ne sais quoi, having been in the outdoors, to learn and value that community in which we're part of, how do we then give it to them? And that's the central point of Jonathan's question, is that we have to do a better job of getting youngsters and seniors into the outdoors and be able to play and resonate with them as to how it settles us down as Homo sapiens and humans.
Mm-hmm. Drew, I ask you to chime in. What are your thoughts?
Well, Larry, I think that age-old adage of meeting people where they are holds true, but I think we also have to go where folks are, not just physically, to go where they are, not pulling them to where we want them to be, but going to where they are, understanding their cares and concerns is important. Part of that means teaching folks that nature is everywhere, not just in the wild beyond, but in the seams of the sidewalk where some weed grows into a wildflower or in a pigeon's flight through a concrete and steel canyon. Those are no less flora and fauna to be noticed. But then I think we also need to understand how many people are already in nature that may be in ways that we're not thinking. You know, we talked earlier, Preston talked about tending the crops. The first way, the first inroads that we ought to have is understanding we all share same air, same water, same soil in this one earth. And so we have a shared fate. And our food comes from the soil, right? As conveniently packaged as it may be, it comes from the soil. If we eat meat, it blinks. We as hunters know that, but many folks don't. But even if you're on a totally plant-based diet, those plants have to grow somewhere, often in places that used to be wildlife habitat. So I say all that to say connecting people through foods, folks understanding that clean water, we're all upstream or downstream from somebody else. So what we do has an impact on them. To understand that, to understand our connectedness is important. And for us to expand that message beyond the traditional crowd into communities of color, into places where people may not have adequate access to whole foods. The example of Flint, Michigan and water is sadly classic. It's not just Flint. It's in many places, north, south, east and west. So we can't separate conservation from environmental justice, and we can't separate environmental justice from civil rights. So then civil rights comes back around to conservation. So all of these things feed one upon another. And I believe that Leopold was getting there. He had said so in so many words, but not maybe as explicitly as some understand. But I think his trajectory was leading us to a place to understand that this land ethic wasn't just about, you know, all those things wild and free. It was also about us and our ultimate freedom as human beings to be all that we can be. So that's... you know, maybe a big answer for a pretty small question, but I think it bears noting how many times, Leopold talked about love, how many times he talked about care. And that's an important thing. Estella told me when I asked her how her dad got them to this place of such inclusion and appreciating diversity. And she said, you know, he just always told us to do the right thing. Do the right thing. So if you're doing the right thing by nature, then you're going to be doing some of the right things by human beings. Then do the right things by human beings. You're going to be doing the right things by nature. And then you meet right where it is. And that's the key, I think.
Oh, well put. Buddy, anything to add there?
Well, it's hard to follow Drew. I think one passage of Leopold's come to mind. There are two things that interest me, the relationship of people to the land and the relationship of people to each other. And I think that is what Drew is talking about, is we can't just take care of places. We have to take care of people, and we have to take care of people in their places. And I think that, you know, is a new conversation around conservation that has emerged with more urgency and more focus. And I think that's what we tried to step into with Leopold Week, because I think if people just, you know, would read and listen to Drew more, the world would be better. Like, let's just start there. And then let's go further, and let's have Secretary Cole leading our natural resources and Heather Berkland as our new chief state forester. I mean, the pieces of the puzzle are there. We just have to really start to focus on filling in the center and making these connections with each other. So, and then one last plug for our own program. I mean, I totally agree with Preston. It starts with kids. Our programming usually starts with high school and college age students. We have a fellows program for recently graduated college students. We would love to increase the diversity of that program, and we're accepting applications right now. So come, you know, come learn how to tend the land, increase your communication skills, and become a conservation leader. That's what we're trying to do, is find the next Drew Lanham or Preston Cole that can come and train with us.
Well put again. You guys are good.
Larry, had I known Larry, I would have put a primer out for the students at Stevens Point, that knowing that Dr. Drew was going to be on the call, that they should at least get a half a credit, because he is teaching today, folks. Speaking the truth.
Oh, boy. Well, let's take another call. Jim in Abbotsford has been waiting quite a while here. Jim, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Hey, Jim and panel, this is a great discussion. I'm just curious, maybe we can start with Secretary Cole. How does the land ethic inform, you know, one of our biggest challenges right now, which is climate change? How do you take the land ethic and apply that to, you know, addressing climate change? So that's all I have. But this is a good discussion.
Thank you very much, Jim. Well, Secretary Cole, yeah, they Jim was asking you to start, and we'll go through everybody on that one, I think.
We continue to meet people where they are, whether they're in a city, town, or village. You know that folks in cities, certainly in the state of Wisconsin, where, in fact, flooding has occurred in one neighborhood in Milwaukee, that's 2008, 2010, 2012, and the basements were flooded time and time again of the people who were least apt to be able to pay for that repair. And so you don't have to explain to folks that this flooding will continue if we don't make the effort to make sure that this land ethic about salvaging people who are so put upon needlessly, that we have to turn this around, that our environment is far too precious to us not to pay attention to climate change. And, you know, our governor certainly has set the pace in terms of funding climate change and planting more trees and recognizing that we need to do more with infrastructure and the like. But, you know, I have to speak to what Dr. Drew said, which is you got to meet people where they are, and it's going to be different from, you know, rural prosperity and planting more trees in the canopy to make sure that, you know, one, people can go to work to do this. We can pay people, you know, we can pay people to remove lead laterals out of homes and the like, and create work, meaningful work, and tie people to the land in a myriad of ways. And I offer that as an opportunity to you know, follow up about meeting people where they are and listening and hearing to them.
Yeah. Drew, comment.
Well, I think one of the things that we did, Larry, and you know, climate change became obvious to many people in the wildlife profession when we talked about polar bears drowning in the Arctic and the polar ice caps melting and the seas rising, all of which are true and terrible things. But what we failed to do was to connect polar bears to black and brown children who are suffering from asthma, and little poor children, impoverished children in Appalachia who can't breathe, and at rates far worse than the majority. So, but it's the same air that's melting the polar ice caps that's creating difficulty in breathing for children. So I think we have to break the data down into these palatable bites of relevance so that people understand that, as Preston was saying, it hits them at home, that it's not some faraway issue based upon a day that's warmer than you think it should be or colder than you think it should be, that we have to look long term, and it involves really us thinking long term. You know, that old parable about planting the seeds of the tree under which whose shade you will never sit, but considering those to come behind you. That's all a part of an ethic. An ethic isn't to serve your self-interests. It's to serve the interest of the society at large. So I think breaking things down to relevant bites so that people say, hey, yeah, you know, this is different. And hunters, for example, know that. You know, I know waterfowlers who, in the blind, man, they talk all the time about duck shortstopping. They're up there in Manitoba. They haven't come down into Stuttgart, Arkansas, or come down here because the water's still open. And in the blind, they'll talk all day long about how things have changed, but then they'll get out of that blind and be afraid of those two words, climate change. So I think we have to open the doors for people to say what they're seeing and not be afraid of it, but to know it's something that we can tackle. So it has to be relevant. That means it has to be real, but we got to give people a chance to tell their stories from every perspective.
Hmm. Buddy, you comment from you?
Well, all right. I can't be hitting behind Drew in the lineup anymore. Have me the leadoff hitter at least, please. But, you know, a quick shout out to a piece that Drew's recently written in Emergence magazine, where he envisions an exchange of letters between Dr. Martin Luther King and Rachel Carson. And he talks about this convergence of social justice and conservation. And I think that's what he was talking about is climate change. We have to kind of recognize that there's an environmental ecological component and there's a social cultural component. And the conservation community has to get better at that messaging. The rest of the community needs to kind of understand that. And I think to Preston's point, then we need to connect this up with economics, because I do think our society is facing the biggest make work project that we've ever seen. And it's all in that realm of doing good. And so how powerful is that? We see that in the audiences we engage. You know, this younger generation wants to make the world a better place. And that's one of the defining features of their value set. And we need them. And so I think we're going to have opportunities to find how we put good service to good work. And I also hope that whole concept of service comes back, because I think that's been something that's been lost over the last decade or two, the value of service in any kind of way. But climate change is going to be solved by this ethic of love, this ethic of service to one and to each other.
Yeah, I think the old CCC, I think a Climate Conservation Corps, that's been discussed recently, might be just a really, really good thing to look more into and to give some good thought to, and maybe get it into action. Well, what a wonderful 45 minutes with you three. Just once more, Buddy, back to you. How do people get involved? This is, we're right in the middle of Leopold Week and all the various things that are going on. Where do they go to find out how to get involved?
Yeah, well, obviously, first thing you could do is pick up a Sand County Almanac, read the foreword, revisit that, pick up Drew's book, Home Place. You know, other writers, James Edwards Mills here in the state of Wisconsin, Kim Blazer, Patty Lowe, Robin Kimmerer, all have connections to Wisconsin. Those are all voices that people should be familiar with. But you can go to our website, www.aldoleopold.org/Leopold Week. If you want to see other programs that are still forthcoming, sign up. And if you register for any event, you'll, even if you can't make it, you'll get the program sent to you, and then you'll subsequently get links to Drew and Stan Temple's program. So just think about how you can do good. That's the that's the most important thing.
Well, Preston, Drew, buddy, thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it. I wish we'd have had more time. Thank you all for being with us, and thank you for listening in, and I hope you'll stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.